Today, the Gillard government will mark the 20th anniversary of the High Court's historic Mabo judgment by announcing some amendments to the native title laws. Attorney General Nicola Roxon will tell the annual Native Title Conference in Townsville that a number of changes will be legislated to boost the good faith provisions in negotiations and to make agreements more flexible and less technical. This follows complaints, constant complaints really, that the current regime has become too difficult to navigate and is not giving Indigenous Australians control over their traditional lands. Nicola Roxon, welcome to RN Breakfast.
Good morning.
Attorney General, what's the key change you're making today to native title laws?
Well, the key change, there's three of them, but they all have a purpose of making sure now that 20 years on, when people have grown used to the native title system and also been able to identify some of its problems, that we can fix those problems and that we can give parties, Indigenous Australians in particular, the ability to be able to negotiate to a final outcome more of their rights under this regime. And of course, we've seen the maturing of the respondents who negotiate with them, the states and territories, miners, a range of other parties who really want to be able to now negotiate outcomes, and the system is a little bit too difficult to allow that, even where there is good agreement between all of the parties.
Too difficult and too slow, that's the constant criticism. Les Malsa, who heads the Australian Congress of Australia's First Peoples, says the native title laws are an impediment to decent outcomes, that they've become too complex and are taking too long to negotiate, sometimes up to 15 years. How will the changes you announced today speed things up?
Well, you've got to look at it as a combination, because the changes we're announcing today are an important other stage of what we have already been doing over the last couple of years, and indeed what we announced in the budget. So when Minister McClelland was the Attorney General, we made some changes that have had a very significant impact in speeding up the determinations in the court. We made changes in the budget to move the Native Title Tribunal back into the federal court, again with an eye to how quickly those matters can be settled. Mm. But what we're also doing today is making sure that parties are required to negotiate in good faith.
What does that mean, Minister?
What it means is that at the moment there are some cases where people simply wait the course of time, and the court will say, all right, well, you know, because 6 months or 8 months or 12 months down the track you haven't reached an agreement, we'll now take that matter to court and determine it. We want people to genuinely negotiate an outcome, and that genuinely negotiated outcome, which won't be possible in every situation, will mean that some matters will be resolved much quicker and won't need to go to the courts. So it's a mix looking from lots of different directions, because every claim is different, but this is putting some teeth into an area where there has been a complaint that people might just let the clock tick rather than trying to bring these matters to a resolution. Another example...
Which suggests bad faith on behalf of some of those respondents you talked about earlier, state governments or miners or other interests.
Well, and there is a mix. I think there's a maturing and an engagement from many groups who've now got used to native title and do negotiate good agreements mm-hmm. and can do them quickly, and others who really don't regard that as part of, you know, what they should do in their daily working life, and we need them to understand that the government expects proper negotiation with all parties. And the same applies to applicants. They also need to be able to negotiate in good faith.
Okay. Minister, your changes ignore the big push for a reversal of the onus of proof. Currently, it's up to traditional owners to prove that they've got a continuous association with the land. Reversing that would mean the native title objectors would have to prove a continuous attachment no longer exists. Now, Aboriginal people and some of the architects of the native title laws have called for this for some time. Why haven't you made that change?
Well, these other changes are the ones that we're giving priority to. I don't think there's been sufficient discussion or agreement about how reversing the onus would work, but I do acknowledge that many people would like to take that further step. That's not something that the government is prepared to do at this stage, and we think that these changes, one of them that we haven't discussed yet links into this, which is that parties can agree to ignore the historical extinguishment of rights. So at the moment, the system prevents prevents parties being able to agree to do that. So we're taking some steps along this path, but we don't believe that now is the time to try to progress that reversing of the onus. I think technical work needs to be done. I don't think the Parliament would support it, and the government is determined to focus on incremental but significant changes that can improve the Native Title Act.
You're listening to RN Breakfast. Our guest this morning is Attorney General Nicola Roxon. Minister, if we can switch to family law now, because tomorrow the definition of domestic violence in the Family Law Court will be expanded to include derogatory taunts, stalking, withholding money and harming the family pet. Why are these changes needed?
We wanted to make very clear that the interests of the child and the safety of the child do have to be the top consideration at all times for parents and for the courts. And it was unclear with our laws as they stood whether or not, for example, a child witnessing violence between parents would count as a child experiencing violence, whereas of course we know that that can have very serious impacts and long-term damage to a child. So these definitions make clearer that what is unacceptable behaviour in a family relationship can be taken account of by the court when they're determining whether a parent should have ongoing access to a child.
Some are concerned that these new definitions will tip the balance away from shared parenting, which is at the centre of family court disputes at the moment, or resolutions. The Lone Fathers Association warns courts will be too quick to believe allegations of abuse.
Well, I have more faith in the courts in being able to look at factual situations sensibly, but I don't want to be in a position where there might be repeated violence against one parent in full view of what might be a small child, terrified over a long period of time, and an argument being put that that shouldn't be taken into account. That defies common sense. Stalking, a range of very exploitative behaviours, denying one partner access to their family or friends. These sorts of things ought to be taken account of. We support, in a perfect world, every child should have a good, strong relationship with their mother and father. But in a less than perfect world, we want to make sure that the safety of the child is the top consideration. And if you are violent or abusive in a family relationship, you are putting at jeopardy your relationship with your child.
Minister, as Attorney General, you also have oversight of ASIO. Have you asked the Director General of ASIO, David Irvine, about the security checks ASIO performed on Captain Imad, the accused people smuggler, as it was revealed on Four Corners this week, and his six agents, all of whom apparently were processed on Christmas Island?
Well, I've been in Townsville for the last few days, including when this story broke. Our agencies, of course, are always looking at any sort of material that comes to light. I think that my colleagues, both Minister Bowen and Minister Clare, have made some detailed comments, particularly about the AFP process. So I'm just not in the right place to be able to answer that question in detail, but certainly our agencies, and ASIO in particular, does undertake a very thorough examination of anybody who is seeking to be settled permanently in Australia.
And yet Bob Brown said yesterday ASIO has let people, quote, with criminal intent into the Australian community and needs to answer why. Will you be looking for these answers?
Oh, well, certainly we always want to review our processes, but I do highlight that Mr. Brown and others are the very same people who accuse ASIO of behaving inappropriately when we have people who do have adverse findings made against them held in detention. They can't have it both ways. The government needs to be able to protect our national security. We take that very seriously. People are denied permanent visas to settle in Australia where that material is available about people. But I really want a bit of consistency in the debate, that the very same people who criticise the government for keeping people in detention who have been found to be a security risk, even if they have also been found to be entitled to the protection of the Refugee Convention, can't have it both ways.
Nicola Roxon, thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you.
Attorney General Nicola Roxon. It's 12 minutes to 8.